If you were expecting Rich this morning, I understand your disappointment. To start out with, on a personal note, a couple of weeks ago we had a scare with my father, and I know that the church prayed about it, and he actually attends the old Broadhead Church, what they call it now, the CMA, and he heard from people from this church more than his own church, and he wanted to say thank you. He appreciates your prayer. He really considers this church his church. He can't get here all the time, obviously, and he considers Rich to be his pastor. And Rich stopped by the hospital twice, and Dad was thankful and wanted to make sure that you folks knew that he appreciated it. This morning's service, well, the sermon, message, whatever you want to call it, I should have been here 2 weeks ago doing this. And you put the first slide up if you want to, Austin. There we go. Should have been here 2 weeks ago. And I've been doing some reading, and I've used Jonathan Cahn, his books a couple times for sermons, because he's very good. He's a messianic rabbi, a Christian, and he has a lot of insights to what the scripture really means in the translation of, you know, through Jewish eyes, if you will. I'm working on the last book there, Birthright, by Timothy Alberino, and it's interesting. And what he does is, and the sermon was going to be based on things in his book a little bit, but what he does is he takes, as man was intended before the fall, through the fall, and into the last days, how technology is going to maybe change human beings in a way that won't be recognizable. If you can look at popular mechanics even, and they talk about man and machine being, you know, being joined, being one, and what that means exactly. So I had a lot of the sermon written, and I realized that I really couldn't do it for a Sunday morning, because if I did, you folks would all be gone by 1:30 anyway. You know, it was just too much. So I talked to Rich about it, and I said, look, I gotta pare this down. I'm not ready, you know. So I did. And what I'm going to talk about, I think, one little aspect of that. There's a phrase that's used in Scripture only twice in all the whole Bible, only two times. And that is with the call to worship in Psalms and also in Hebrews. It says that man created God a little lower than the angels. And that's kind of fascinating if you think about it. You know, what does a little lower mean? You know, if I walk in the room and I tell Carol, could you turn the TV up a little bit? Well, okay, two notches, or today's a little colder than yesterday, 2 degrees, something minuscule, not big. So what's that mean? You know, if God created man a little lower than the angels, what can the angels do that man couldn't? You know, could he? You know, can angels pat their head and rub their belly? I can't do that. You know, I don't think that's it. But, so I started thinking about it, and I thought, you know, a good place to start would be to think about what angels could do, or what do you know about angels? What's Scripture say about angels? So. Go to the next slide if you want to. There you go. Okay, in Job, when God asked Job about, you know, where does Job find himself in the cosmos, basically? He says, "Were you there when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off the dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched out a measuring cord line across it? On what were its footings set? Who laid the cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together and the angels shouted for joy, Well, that verse tells you a couple things. Morningstar and angel is kind of synonymous, interchangeable, if you will. But it tells you that angels were here before the earth was created. They were first. They were before the earth. Okay. It also tells you they're musical. They can sing. In Colossians, Colossians 1, 15 through 18, Jesus is talking. It says, "The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn among the dead, so that everything might be everything he might have supremacy." Now the term, we get back to the term Morningstar. In Revelation, Revelation 22, verse 16, "I, Jesus, have sent my angel to give you this testimony for the churches. I am the root and the offspring of David and the bright and morning star." So, Jesus calls himself the bright and morning star. Job talks about morning star. So, and Jesus said he's the first morning star. So if he's the first morning star and Job talks about morning stars, that means that the other morning stars were created after Jesus. Now, before you say, well, Jesus was always around, that's true. But the example would be that Jesus' life on earth was 33 years. He was born and he was crucified. Now, that doesn't mean that he wasn't around forever. You know, he wasn't with the Father forever. An aspect of his life was on earth. 33 years. I would submit to you that the term morning star is an aspect of Jesus' life. And he became a morning star before the other morning stars. So all the other morning stars were created. They're not, which would mean that they're not eternal. They have a beginning, but no end, likely. So the verses really don't talk about explicitly the terms of life for angels and morning stars and all that, but it implies that they have a beginning and no end, perhaps. So what were the angels created for? If you look at Psalm 148, verse 5, it says, let them, the angels, praise the name of the Lord. For at his command they were created. You can go to the next slide if you want to. There we go. Psalm 91:11. For he is in command of the angels. He will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. Luke 4:10 says, "For it is written, he will command the angels concerning you to guard you safely." So we have, you know, guardian angels, if you will. That's one of the reasons they were created. And if we go to Psalm 34, 7 and 9, it said, "The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and he delivers them. Oh, taste to see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who trusts in him. Oh, fear the Lord, you his servants, for there is no want for those who fear him." And in Hebrews 1:14, another purpose for angels, "Are not all angels ministering spirits that serve those who inherit salvation?" So those are a few of the reasons that angels exist, a few of the attributes of angels. C.S. Lewis, that Rich likes to quote a lot, he talks about angels and heavenly beings, and says that if we were to encounter an angel, we'd be inclined to worship him, because they're so magnificent. And in Revelation, 19, verse 10, John writes, when he saw an angel, he said, "At this I fell to his feet and worshipped him. But he said to me, 'Don't do that. I'm a fellow servant with you and with your brothers and sisters who hold the testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for he is the Spirit, for he is the Spirit and prophecy who bears witness to Jesus.'" So John sees an angel, and right away he wants to worship it, and the angel says, "Don't do that. You know, we'll both be in hot water." You know, so as C.S. Lewis writes, you'd want to worship angels because they're that magnificent, that much greater than we are. So also, you know, we have this. You get Valentine's Day cards, and you'll see these little fat naked angels with wings playing harps and stuff and all. And that's nothing. It couldn't be further from the truth. We see. In 2 Kings, chapter 6, 15 through 17, it's about Elijah and his servant. When the servant of the man of God who got up went out early the next morning, and an army of horses and chariots had surrounded them and surrounded the city. And the servant says, "Oh no, my lord, what shall we do?" And the servant asked, "Don't be afraid," the prophet answered. "Those who are with us are more than those who are against us." And Elijah prayed and opened his, saying, "Open his eyes, Lord, that he may see." And the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire around Elijah. So that's something else they're not passive. They're warriors. Angels are warriors. And you look at Matthew 26:53, Jesus said, "Do you not think I cannot call my Father, and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12,000 legions of angels?" So again, there's a standing army in heaven, if you will. And they're not passive. You know, they're there to defend the Christian, the saints, and God's kingdom. So we see it's a notion of an organized structure. You know, one of the very telling stories in the Bible that fascinate me is in Matthew 8, 5 through 13. It's the story of the centurion. And when Jesus had entered Capernaum, the centurion came to him and asking for help. "Lord," he said, "my servant lies at home paralyzed. He is suffering terribly." And Jesus said to him, "Shall I come and heal him?" And the centurion replied, "Lord, I do not deserve to have you come to under my roof, but just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and to another one, come, and he comes. And I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." And when Jesus heard this, he was amazed. And he said to those following him, "Truly, I tell you, I have not found anyone in Israel with such great faith." Well, that story is very telling, okay? If you have an idea that, you know, heaven's kind of this nebulous thing where, you know, there's nothing really solid going on, and, you know, angels pop in and out and whatever, this passage says the opposite. This passage says there's an organized structure, that there's a society, if you will. Now, there's angels have a certain job to do. They're under command. There are commanders and of angels, probably. So the picture painted is that, you know, angels are this magnificent creature overall, creatures that we'd be tempted to worship if we saw them. They're powerful warriors. They're created to worship God and to protect the saints. Like I said, there's a societal structure to angels. They're ancient, but not eternal. Okay, they were created. They're musical, so I talked about that. And but if you have these creatures that have this structure, there's no reason to think they wouldn't have personalities also. You know, if we're created a little lower than the angels, you know, we have personalities, sense of humor, you know, likes, dislikes. Why wouldn't you think that angels, if they're bigger, better than we are in some ways, why wouldn't you expect them to have at least the same attributes, if not more? So it's a thought, you know, I find it intriguing in some way. So if we were created lower than the angels, what's that mean exactly? Well, first, Adam was like the angels, meant to live forever, okay? Although the scripture doesn't talk about it directly, God's admonition in Genesis, where Adam and Eve were tempted and they succumbed to the temptation, what was it that God said to them? Like the first thing, if you do this, you'll die. Well, that tells you that death wasn't normal, okay? That was outside the realm. And you know, why else use it for a threat? If you're going to die anyway, you know, it wouldn't be a threat. It's like, well, yeah, it's going to happen. But God told Adam and Eve, if you do this, you're going to die. So that tells me that was outside the realm. That was outside the normal. Adam was meant to live forever. And if Adam was created a little lower than the angels, it's likely that his appearance was akin to the angels. You know, again, C.S. Lewis talks about the same thing, where, you know, if we had met Adam, we'd probably want to worship him because he was so much more magnificent than we were. Okay, he was designed for a purpose, and his purpose was to be the regent or the viceroy or the governor of the earth. You know, the earth was created, and God creates Adam, and he brings all of creation to Adam saying, what do you think? What do you call this thing? You know, it was Adam's choice. You know, Adam ran the earth, basically, okay? And again, if we were created a little lower than the angels, it's, I think, reasonable to think that the angels kind of look like us, all right? Head, two arms, torso, legs, and all that. In Daniel, it talks about when Daniel saw the angel. Hang on a second. Let me pull it back up here. I'll give you the verse. I can get to it. Here we go. Daniel 10, verses 4 and 6. It says, on the 24th day of the first month, I was by the great Tigris River when I looked up and saw a man, dressed in linen and had a belt made of gold from Aswa around his waist, and his body was like that of beryl, his face looked like lightning, his eyes were flashing like flashing torches, and his arms and legs looked like polished bronze. And he spoke to me, and his voice sounded like the roar of a crowd. Well, okay, it's in the shape of a man, but he has four more attributes than man does. His appearance is magnificent, okay? But he looks like a man. He has the same structure, basically. And a few verses later, Daniel even says he looked like a human. So it would appear that both angels and man were created in the image of God. And if you look at Genesis in chapter 2 and 3, it indicates that Adam could talk directly face-to-face with God. And Satan, for that matter. So he could talk to both angels and God. And we know this because God came and walked with Adam in the cool of the day in the garden. And there's something curious. There's a curious verse in Job. Job 15, 7 and 8. And in the English Standard Version, it says, talking to Job, or one of his friends is trying to encourage Job, and they did a lousy job. But in 7 and 8, one of his friends says to Job, are you the first man who was born? Or were you brought forth before the hills? Have you listened in the counsel of God? And do you limit wisdom to yourself? Well, okay. It implies that Adam may have had access to the holy realm. You know, he may have gone and sit in counsel with God. Don't know for sure, but if Adam had more attributes than we had, maybe he did have access to the heavenly realms. Kind of interesting. Yeah, it's. I'm not being a heretic when I say it. I'm just. It's interesting that the scriptures say that. So the fall. So what did Adam lose in the fall? Well, and the fall just didn't corrupt Adam. It corrupted all of creation, as the verse in Romans says. You know, creation groans to be restored. But you know, to speak about Adam specifically, he was in the garden for an unspecified period of time. He could have been protected a number of years, for that matter. Satan appeals to Eve's desire to be like God, and that's the same. Satan's appeal to Eve to be like God is the same. It's the same temptation that that Satan uses all through Scripture. If you get the Revelations, the mark of the beast, I think, will be something so appealing that you'll take it. You'll do it just because you want to be like God, okay? I mentioned singularity when man and machine come together that they're talking about in 3 or 4 years. And if you look into it, it's kind of frightening because you have Elon Musk talking about neuro implants where he can hotwire, rewire your brain for you, basically. You have science that now can take and change your DNA. They have nanobots that they can inject into you, in your bloodstream, that will build things inside your body. They're not on the verge of, but they're working on having an implant that would take and rewire your brain, and then become genetic. So every generation after that has that same gene modification. Okay. So and I'm going to get off the track a little bit, but the question becomes, how much change can you do to the human DNA before it's no longer human? Okay? And if you're no longer human, you can't be saved. So the mark of the beast would be, I think, I don't know, I think would be something that would change your DNA to where you're no longer human. Okay? And this is my opinion, a little sidebar. It's my opinion that in the garden at the fall, there was, in the interchange with Satan and Adam and Eve, there was something that changed their DNA, okay? To the point that God didn't recognize them. And when Christ came along, if you read the book of If you read the book of Ruth, where Naomi and Boaz became the kinsman redeemer from Naomi's family, he had to be from the family to redeem her. Okay, well, Christ had to be from the family, fully man, fully God, to redeem us, because our DNA had been corrupted enough that God didn't recognize us. It's as if. It's a lousy example, and if I'm crazy after the fact, tell me, okay? But if I went and bought a lawnmower or whatever, and I bring the thing home, and the first thing I do is I mess around and change things on it. I'm going to use this carburetor, not that carburetor. I'm going to make all these changes to it, and I go to fire it up, it won't run. So I call the factory rep. Hey, I just bought this mower, it doesn't run. And the guy comes out and looks at it and says, I'm not sure what that is, but we didn't build it. Okay? I can't help you. I don't recognize it. you know, our lawnmowers don't have a satellite antenna and a lawn chair. It doesn't happen. Okay? Well, kind of the same thing happened to us. Okay? Satan changed the DNA in the exchange with Adam and Eve, that we had to have a covering, a sacrifice to cover the difference. So God recognized this. You can change the slide here if you want to. To prove the point, this is a longevity chart. Adam lived 930 years. David lived 70. So there was a DNA, there was a sickness in implanted of some sort that changed. You know, if Adam had been intended to live forever and didn't, well, you can see down through history, lifespan got shorter and shorter. Well, how'd that happen? And why? All right, there's something happened there. I don't know what it is. You know, and it's one of those things that you're like, there's something there, but I don't know what. Okay, and I don't think I'm being heresy. You know, I don't think it's heresy to say that there was something happened. Something did happen. What else did Adam lose? Well, if you look at we talked about 2 Kings. When Elijah prayed that his servant's eyes be opened, okay? He didn't pray, make your army visible, all right? He prayed that his servant's eyes be opened. So the problem of not being able to see the angels laid with the servant, not the angels, okay? So where Adam could talk to God directly, we can't. The servant couldn't. He couldn't see the angels, couldn't see God. But Elijah prayed that his eyes be opened, okay? Balaam's donkey, kind of a silly example, but if you read the passage about Balaam's donkey, it says God opened the eyes of Balaam to see the angel. You know, the donkey saw it, all right? But Balaam didn't, and God opened Balaam's eyes. It falls to reason that the problem lies with us, not with them, okay? We can't see them for whatever reason, because we lost the ability in the fall. I think it's kind of interesting, you know? And we talked about redemption, about the kinsman redeemer. If you read the passage, you know, about in Ruth, Boaz is a type of Christ, in many ways, you know, because he was of the same bloodline, just like, again, you know, Jesus being fully man and fully God, the same bloodline. So if we go on and look at John 1:12, it talks about the restoration of man after the fall. It says, yet to all who receive him, to those who believe in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Now, some versions say the sons of God. There's an interesting thing. In the Old Testament, heavenly beings, celestial beings, were referred to as sons of God. You know, the angels were called sons of God. Okay, and that didn't really, and that term really wasn't used much in the New Testament. But in John, he does use that term, you know, children of God. Well, if angels were called the sons of God, they had all these attributes. At the resurrection, or, you know, when we pass from this body to the next body, we have the right to become sons of God, meaning like the angels. In Matthew 22, verse 30, Jesus is being questioned about. He was asked, well, whose wife will this be after, you know, in heaven? And Jesus answered and said, at the resurrection, people will neither marry nor be given in marriage. They will be like the angels in heaven. Okay? Well, is he talking specifically about marriage? I don't think so. Angels don't marry. But to be like the angels means a glorified body, I believe. So I think what the takeaway should be from this today is that we will be like Adam. You know, our glorified bodies will be like Adam. You know, we'll be like the angels. You know, I'll be ripped. When I get there, I'll be ripped, okay? And I'll be able to pat my head and rub my belly, probably. Yeah. But that's the encouragement part of today. I don't think we think much about, you know, what are angels and what they look like and how they operate. You never hear a service about her. But I think it's fascinating that it's kind of the unspoken thing about the scripture. You talk about, you know, we'll have a glorified body when we die. But what's that mean exactly? And I think it's far more than what you can imagine. So, anyway, so I bored you for 45 minutes, so, or what, third, half hour. Anyway, that's about it.
Mr. Nagle, the books that you are reading, can you get them at a bookstore, or do you have to order them?
I order them. Yeah, I forced Carol to go on Amazon. Yeah. But I'll caution you. The book I'm reading now, the Birthright book, he talks about a lot of things that it's pretty deep, and you read it and it's fascinating, but you have to go look it up yourself, make sure, like, is that quote exactly what he saw? And he's good, and it's really an interesting book. And you can't study enough. Scripture, I think, is written from 30,000 feet in many ways, where it doesn't give you details. You know, like this, it doesn't say Adam was meant to live forever. But if you piece it all together, it does. You know, that's the conclusion you come to. And this is more Bible study stuff than a sermon. But I found it fascinating. So, you know, if you liked it, great. If you didn't, you get your money back. So, yeah.
I may have misunderstood, but I'd like clarification or told that I misunderstood. In regards to the centurion.
Yeah.
You said, I think, the angels were ancient, but not eternal.
Yes.
You did not say that. Will you please explain that to me? I don't.
They had a beginning. You know, or. You know, God always was, okay? And I think a lot of the assumption is a lot of times that everything in heaven always was. It was always there. I don't think so. You know, I think angels were created. So they got to be, there's a starting point, but maybe no ending point, but there's a starting point. So they're not eternal, okay? Maybe that's the wrong term. I think it's right. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
I wanted to make sure I understood.
And my horrible example would be Jesus. Okay, Jesus always was. Okay, you know, the scripture said he was with the Father forever, but on earth he was born. He had a starting point. Okay, now going forward after the resurrection, Jesus will always be. Okay, he's one of the attributes of the three-in-one God, all right? But he had a starting point on earth, okay? That doesn't mean that's when he began, okay? Is that clear, or is that like?
No, you
okay.
You answered my question.
Okay, so I'm not committing heresy?
No,